Please, read from sheets. I am. Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am. Sofa King.
Faster.
I am. Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King with Todd.
You say funny things.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sofa King podcast. We are here today, minus one, plus one. So we are missing the black half.
It's like a Snickers and a Diet Coke, man. That just equals out. We're good. That's a zero.
and we picked up a non-American. He's from Canada. He drove all the way from Canada in his Prius.
That's our first non-U.S. citizen.
Yep. Yeah.
Are you U.S.?
He's a terrorist.
Yeah. No.
You got a green card, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, friend of the show, Jordan, I don't know if you want your last name put out there, but he's going to share Dave's spot on the show. He's using his microphone, putting it in his mouth, you know, spitting on it. He loves Dave.
You got some hard S's over there, buddy.
Me?
Yeah, you're sassafras.
He's from Saskatchewan. What is it?
That's very impressive, by the way. Well, if you want to say it properly, it's Saskatchewan.
Okay. I'm sorry.
All right.
So today's topic, we're going to be talking about Pearl Harbor. That is I call it the 1941 9/11.
That's true. That's a lot of numbers.
Yeah. Actually, more people, U.S. Soldiers died in Pearl Harbor than people that died in 9/11. So it's pretty big murder total. What do you guys think?
So what's up, Jordan? Start telling us about it. So 1941, December.
On,
yeah,
Dave.
You're taking Dave's place. You got to like, step
Dave.
Up.
You got notes.
Warm up to the mic. Let's start talking.
Okay, well, I think it's important if you're going to talk about it, you kind of want to talk about kind of the things that led up to it. And I think we're really talking about it because it was just last week, the anniversary, right?
Right.
Yes.
So at least kind of topical and timely. But leading up to it, I remember like in school, at least when I was in school, I just remember that the Japanese surprise attacked Pearl Harbor.
Right.
It's like the one thing that stuck in my memory. When I went back and did some of this research about it, I know there's a conspiracy. Did we know? Did we not know? But when I looked back and actually read it, there was a lot of events that led up to it that...
I figured out that the teachers from 19 anything until now were liars until I grew up.
Yeah.
They lied about the pilgrims.
Yeah, that's true because I as I started looking into it, I was like, wait a minute, like...
I don't think they're liars. I think they all believed it, but I think that it was just some, you know.
There's a whole bunch of stuff, like you said, that's leading up to this event, and it was actually surprising some of the stuff I found out. Do you want to go in chronological order this time, Brent? Because last time,
Jordan is. He started back. He went back before 1941. He's already on. He's on the ball. He's got notes over there.
I wrote stuff down.
Yeah.
Ooh.
With a pen. So.
so he couldn't erase it. So if it's wrong. Fuck you.
Yeah, it's written in ink for sure. So in 1931, this is kind of what starts a lot of this stuff, is Japan invades Manchuria, which is, you know, more or less what's mainland China now. So
shitty wall.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't use the sweet and sour pork effectively. And so they invade into Manchuria, and by 1937, they're really at war with China. And at that point in time, China's pretty fragmented, right? It's like a three-part war. There's like the communists are fighting the nationalists, are fighting the Japanese, and all at the same time.
Meanwhile, we're in the Great Depression and like eating our belts and starving.
Exactly.
Okay.
More or less, right? In 1937, Franklin Delano Roosevelt basically comes out and he has a speech. It's called the Quarantine Speech, right? So he comes out, goes on the radio, and basically tells everyone, stop supporting the aggressors. He doesn't say who the aggressors are,
right?
But it's really kind of inferred that it's, you know, Germany and Japan, because at this point in time they're at war with basically, you know, Europe and in Asia, right? So because at that time things were going on there that like people in America were supporting or selling arms and resources to these countries that were at war.
Right.
Like there were Americans supporting Nazi Germany, and there were Americans supporting the Allies financially and in other ways.
Yeah. Well, it's because you didn't really know. I guess at that time, you probably didn't really know what Germany was really trying to do, the full scope of everything.
I think that the whole climate of trust was different back then. Like, there's no internet, there's no CNN. Yeah. You're not.
It's whatever you were told. That's what you're believing.
Yeah, even if Fox News isn't pumping fake stuff at you or what they want you to see, like, you had nothing but a newspaper or like some telegraph. Like, let's just say these guys are doing bad stuff right now.
Brent's favorite voice.
Because it's good. Did you hear that?
There was no Kanye West.
Yeah.
So there was no Drake.
You literally have just, and you trust your government at this point too.
Yeah, and the government at that point in time was kind of just like, let's just stay out of it.
Right.
And so everyone was kind of just doing their own thing personally.
Because we'd only been out of like World War One for, 10 years? It hadn't been that long since World War One, and 17 million people died. So, and 20 million people were injured. So they're like, yeah, let's not do that again. Let's take a break.
Yeah, there was a huge, I mean, World War One was terrible.
Yeah.
So no one was pumped to go to war. I mean, before that war was like, before that was like Spanish-American War. There was a war in the Philippines. And people like, that was like Teddy Roosevelt time, like the Rough Riders. And he was pumped to go to war. Like, you know, he put together his own.
That's because his grandpa got killed in World War, you know, whatever, the Philippine War or something, you know. And he's like the old Bush family. Like,
yeah.
It's like the return of...
I think for a lot of people then, they didn't understand what war was really about, and they were they were excited. They were that people were worried that they weren't going to see combat. And then after World War One, people were like,
"That sucked.
Don't want to do it."
It was so horrible.
I want to kill people. Get out there. No, I don't want to kill nobody no more. Please leave me at home.
So anyway, basically FDR comes out and blasts the Japanese,
right?
Which obviously they didn't like. And then in 1940, Japan invaded French Indochina. So right after France fell to the Germans, Japan basically went and took over what is now Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, that area. And the reason they did it is because the United States and other countries were shipping supplies into China for them to...
You know,
basically funding the Chinese resistance against the Japanese.
Right.
They wanted to block those shipping lanes, right?
What's our I thought, like, why are we not getting along with Japan? Why are we helping China instead? Like,
it was an economics thing, like, because they were allies in World War One. Japan was allies with the United States.
A ton of stuff to Japan, though, right? Like, I think we exported tons of oil.
And I think that's where things got messed up, because by the time World War II was going on, we weren't in good standings with each other as far as economics go, and that's what actually got Japan pissed off at America. I don't know exactly what the issue was with the economics, but I know that's what it states, you know, saying that they were angry at us because of economic issues, and so that was the plan for the attack. They started, you know, trying to get U.S. involved in the war, which was a mistake, apparently.
Well, part of it was too that the United States had interests in Southeast Asia, right? We had the Philippines and Guam and all that good stuff in there, and those areas are very resource rich.
Okay.
And Japan is not very resource rich. So when Japan started trying to expand their empire, it's only logical that they're going to be taking over their neighbors next to them.
Right.
And that we see that as an affront to us, right? So, and the United States, while they were isolationist, they weren't in support of aggression or empire building, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was huge rallies and movements against war. Like, there was some guy named Nye, I can't remember his first name, but he would hold giant rallies for the American... there was a huge group that was an anti-war group.
And that's how it is. I mean, you think of Vietnam, at all the people that you know, wanted peace, not war. And going off what Jordan's talking about, them wanting to take over the Philippines, actually, bombing Pearl Harbor actually would give them more time to attack the Philippines, to try and take over the actual land.
How was the state of, like, the United States economy? Like, is that FDR's major motivation? Like, other than obviously protecting the resources in China and keeping Japan from moving in, like, because a lot of the basis for what would be like the skeptics who think that it's a conspiracy theory is, like, what's the motivation to go to war with Nazis? Like, at the time I read that we weren't even, like, battle ready. Like, on top of the fact that we're going to get all our stuff blown up, that we only had like one battle ready battalion, and Nazis had 200 or are already in war, and they have all this, the war machine's moving, and they have tanks and all this crazy technology. Like, it seemed like we were pretty vulnerable at the time. So why would we want to get into war? I mean, it doesn't seem like we had time. I can see like the economics of let's make tanks, let's make boats, let's make bullets, put everybody to work, let's start doing this stuff and increase our you know, our military. But what's it sounds scary. It sounds like we weren't ready to do that.
Well, I don't think that we were though. Is the thing that they when they attacked us, that's what made them say like, okay, like, do we want to do this?
Yeah, but if Japan had just kept going, they probably would have whooped our ass at that point. I think, right?
I don't think so.
No, not really. And we can kind of get into that the further we go along right. and answer some of those questions. But the state of the United States economy was we were in the Great Depression. But we were starting to come out of it,
right?
So a lot of the things that were done that FDR had put in, the New Deal programs like the Tennessee Valley Authority and these big public works projects were putting people back to work.
Right.
And there's nothing that puts more people back to work like having to start a war machine to fight something.
Right.
Like
you got to build planes. Right. You got to build planes, tanks, boats. I mean, you know,
and you
all
get everyone
kinds of stuff.
United too. Yeah. Everyone's going to hold together for it.
So what happened really after Japan invaded more or less Vietnam, right? The French Indochina area is the United States stopped sending Japan airplanes, parts, machine tools, and aviation gas, right? So before this, we were sending
them. We were fueling them.
All this stuff because, like I said, the United States was, everyone was kind of doing their own thing.
It's just, who wants to buy something? We got it. Yeah. We need money.
Well, and it's,
putting people back to work.
Yeah,
right?
And it's like, you're at war. We don't care about
Germany. Well, we're just
Germany.
Starving. Yeah. Like, I think the end of the Great Depression was 1939 or so. Yeah. So we're literally just over eating your own belt and shoes.
Yeah.
Like starving. That's true, dude. People ate their belt. That's
yeah, they're having babies just so they can eat them.
They're Brad Reynolds. I never started the timer. Damn it.
That's all right. We don't need a timer.
But I mean,
that's 11 minutes.
They're not doing that anymore because we just opened an airplane factory to sell these parts. 5,000 new jobs, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, but they didn't stop sending them oil because it would have been seen as a provocation to Japan.
Right.
Right. We already went out on the radio and badmouthed them, and now we're going to cut off their oil and they're heavily reliant on imports of U.S. oil.
80% of their oil was provided by the United States. Yeah.
So we didn't quite take that step yet. But in 1941, which is really interesting, and kind of here we start to get into more of some of the ideas behind the conspiracy, is Roosevelt moves the Pacific Fleet to Hawaii from San Diego.
The low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, it moves them out there. So the rationale for moving the fleet was they were worried about Japanese aggression in Southeast Asia, which more or less means the Philippines for us, right? So we want to move the fleet closer to help them out. They wanted to fortify the Philippines and send people out there to MacArthur. And they wanted to send him a number of troops where he was like, you need to send me 10 times that number of troops for me to be able to defend this island from the Japanese. There's no way. So they didn't end up fortifying the Philippines, but they did move the fleet to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I heard MacArthur was crazy. Like that guy said he had a special insight to the mind of the Orient, and he didn't need presidential advisement. He could handle it himself.
Wow.
And then how do you get that guy on the phone?
And this is what's crazy about all wars that we have or something, you know, like you always, after the fact, you know, after something bad has happened, and like I said, I kind of relate this to 9/11 because it's kind of like it's almost the same, like the way that it played out and the way that everything went. It's like it's almost like, I mean, you always hear the term history repeats itself. And it's like you start reading this stuff and you're like, wow, we just went through all this stuff in our time watching something terrible happen. Thousands of people got killed. And you hear claims that the government knew that it was going to happen. The president knew that it was going to happen. Same thing. You start reading into Pearl Harbor. There was information that Japan was going to attack. They didn't really know exactly what they were going to do.
Right.
Kind of the same thing, 9/11. You know, didn't really know exactly what was going to happen. They kind of knew a leeway of what, you know, they were working on because they had communications and spies in place to where they knew they could hear Japan's military talking between each other. They knew what was going on.
Well, it worked. And you know, the Bush administration looks at that and says, hey, if Grandpa had a recipe for cookies.
Yeah.
This is how you make cookies.
And so it's the same thing though. Like you have this thing, they kind of knew, you know, they watched the planes come in on a radar. Somebody told them to ignore it. And then this huge event happens, you know, that changed history. And then same thing, 9/11, it was kind of the same thing. You hear all these rumors or not, whatever they are. Oh, the Bush administration knew that we were going to be attacked, and then it happened. They let it happen, and now they pass these new laws. You know what I mean?
Patriot Act. He read a children's book upside down.
Yeah. So you know, like that really, like as I read this, like everybody knows about Pearl Harbor. Everybody, you know what I mean? Like it was just its anniversary. But you start reading into it, and you really see similarities in multiple times across, you know what I mean, this last 100 years, you know.
So the part you're at right now, the McCollum memo, did you read about that? There was a memo put out like a year prior to the movements by FDR to move the fleet there and to impose an embargo. Some say that McCollum memo is a large part of evidence for the conspiracy theorists, yeah, because it was basically a list of like 8 major actions that would propagate and basically, you know.
Yeah, United States, you need to do these things.
It was a recipe to pick a fight.
Exactly, yeah.
So, and he did all of those. In 1 year, they did everything on the list of the McCollum memo. And the first thing being what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, really, and then from there, once we embargo some of these, you know, plane parts and things like that, they started the Lend-Lease Act, which I remember from school learning about the Lend-Lease Act, at least glossing over it. But really what the Lend-Lease Act is we're giving away military equipment and resources to the Allies.
Right.
That's really what it is. And it was $50.1 billion in aid, which today would have been $659 billion.
Wow. That's insane.
Chump change, man.
And we're like, we're so surprised that they would ever attack us when we're giving the guys fighting all this equipment. Yeah.
So clearly we wanted it to
happen. Again, history. I mean, we gave all the weapons, Humvees, you know, I mean, the Toyotas that ISIS is driving around in, we supplied them.
That's because they abandoned that shit. Is that crazy? But, we just abandoned Humvees.
But who do you give it to? Yeah, but, you give it to supposed allies that were fighting against, you know, a common enemy, and then they turn against you.
Yeah, but they, like, so in the 80s, right, when Afghanistan was fighting, it was fighting Russia, we gave them, you know, rocket-propelled grenades and anti
and trained Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, and trained
all
these people.
Guess who they're shooting at now?
Yeah, and those same weapons are coming back to bite us these days.
No, that ISIS shit, they just came up on all that. That was like, they were like, wow, it's too much to ship it back. It costs billions of dollars. And when they abandoned
they left it to the people because they were helping fight the rebels. And then they turn into the rebels who are now fighting us.
A lot of times, too, what happens is, you know, we leave and it's just, okay, we're like, you guys are on your own. Here's some equipment. The people, the like ISIS and these other type of insurgent groups, they come in and they say, you either join us or we're going to kill you and your family. And those guys are like, we're sitting here like, we gave them all this stuff and they turned on. It's like, well, they may not have had a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And they probably didn't.
But that happens a lot.
For sure.
You would think like after so many years of fighting wars, like you would understand that, hey, we're going to give these people all these things and guess what's going to happen? You know, like you would think you would know.
Well,
like
you go kill that kid's uncle and his dad, and you're going to make some, you know, you create those extremists over there, and then what are they going to do? If they don't have an opportunity to go be a CPA,
in the Quran it says to kill United States.
They're not even going to have an opportunity to work at Subway.
That's what it says.
Like their life motivation is like, oh,
Brent,
you're going to give me.
I've read the Quran, Brent. You don't argue with me.
You're going to get a gun and I get to be part of the cool guy club. You know what I mean? Like, fuck yeah, I want a machine gun and a black outfit and I can carry a flag and write.
I want
the gun
of
American
Rambo.
Yeah.
Have you seen Lord of War? Where the dude wants the gun of Rambo?
No.
He's only seen part 3, though. So it's not...
that Lord of War, is that a documentary?
No, it's a Nicolas Cage movie.
Oh,
it's,
God. He's a,
you don't
he's
like Nicolas Cage? Yeah, he's
a good movie. Oh, I have seen that movie. You know what? I hate on Nicolas Cage, and then I end up watching the movies, and I like it.
There you go.
Yeah, you have to.
All right, Jordan, continue your timeline. We're way off topic.
Yeah, no problem. So in July, so the Lend-Lease Act happens March 41. July in 41, the U.S. stops exporting oil to Japan. So the U.S. stops exporting. Yeah.
They have no choice. They have no oil. They have to do something at that point.
And the more I go through these things, like I said, it's like, how do we not see it coming? It's like when you're in the car with your brother and you're poking him in the gut.
Yeah,
he's going to hit you.
Eventually, he's going to hit you.
Yeah. Right.
And then your mom turns around and you're like, what happened? You're like, I didn't do anything. He just punched me.
Right.
Like, that's the story that I start to get the more I research this. So we stop sending them oil. And what that forces them to do is put into play some plans to take over Indonesia, what's now Indonesia. Back then, it was the Dutch East Indies. So they... start putting those plans in place, but they know that the United States warns them, hey, stop. The U.S. is prepared to take steps if you guys keep attacking your neighbors. So yeah. We basically put them in a position where for them to keep their war machine going, they have to invade one of their neighbors and say, if you invade one of your neighbors, we're going to do something about it.
Right.
And so they're
And they're helping Germany at this time. So if they don't start helping Germany or keep helping them, Germany's probably going to turn against them. You know, I mean,
they're allies with Germany.
That
was on there. You're saying,
I'm saying if Japan stops, like totally just starts agreeing with the United States, we won't do anything, we're gonna stop, and pulls out, you would think Germany's gonna get pissed and now they're gonna go ahead and take over Japan.
No, we clearly put them in a catch 22.
They were in a tough spot. So in November, Japan offers to withdraw their forces from southern Indochina, so you know, Vietnam area, and not launch any attacks in Southeast Asia so long as the U.S., Britain, and the Dutch stop aiding China. So they say, stop helping them so we can crush them.
Right.
and then we'll stop invading these places and lift the sanctions on us. So give us the oil to defeat them.
How gangster is Japan though? They're like this little tiny island and they're like they're taking on China, coming over fighting us. Like that's crazy.
But
dude,
China's disorganized, you know what I mean? Like they are terribly disorganized at this point in time. And the big thing is for them is to crush China and then force Russia into a two-front war where they have to fight the Germans, what would be their west, and then they'd have to fight the Japanese on
from the east. Right? Coming in both sides.
You know what they needed, man? The Ajanti dagger. Like, I don't know if you guys seen Big Trouble in Little China, but if they'd have had some of that magic juice that makes Raiden, like they just need that.
Well, you know why China won World War II, right?
I don't know. No, tell me, Brad. You're
Jackie
gonna tell
Chan.
Me. Oh,
okay.
No, they just need a Big Trouble in Little China. They need Kurt Russell and a wife beater.
Yeah.
And then fucking like 10 Asian guys, and that was it, dude. Japan could have just backed off.
I don't think that worked.
And the Ajanti dagger. Continue.
So the U.S. counter proposes to Japan, like, leave China altogether without any conditions and sign non-aggression pacts with all your neighbors.
Right.
So basically, whatever you've done, undo it all.
Mm-hmm.
Japan gets that memo, and I believe it was called the whole memo or the whole letter, and they get it one day after they set the Japanese fleet to attack Pearl Harbor. Like they're like, yeah.
It was too late. Yeah.
Well, even if they got it, they weren't going to do that. They would have seen it as losing face to withdraw.
Yeah. Well, you got to think too, Japanese culture, their thing is about honor. You know what I mean? Like they'd rather die. Like you come and kill everybody here. We died with honor and we didn't give in to, you know what I mean, our enemies. That's the way we want to go out.
Yeah, kamikaze. Like they'll take meth and fly their plane into your house. Yeah. Like they don't care. They're going to win.
So, you know, and what, you know, stats on that. I mean, go ahead and keep going because we'll get into stats on when we get actually into the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. So more or less, they launched the fleet. They do some crazy tricky stuff though. So they take their radio operators because they've been training for this, right? So there's some unique topographical situations in Pearl Harbor. The harbor is very, it's not very deep. It's like 40 feet deep in some places. So it was thought that torpedo attacks wouldn't be effective there because torpedoes would drop them and they would dip down deep into the water
and just hit the bottom out.
Detonate, right?
Right.
So they had to figure that out, the logistics for that. So they studied a British attack on a harbor that was similar depth is like 75 feet. So the United States wasn't so worried about torpedo attacks from planes. They're like, the harbor's...
Right, it's going to bottom out.
It's too shallow.
It's too shallow, right?
Submarines can't really get in there. It's harder, you know.
Yeah, very difficult. So they were practicing this attack just for months, right?
Yeah.
Because this is their one shot, right? It's like when you go to sucker punch the guy at the bar, that's you know, the super steroid guy.
Yeah, and you already know you're waking the sleeping giant. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they already know what they're doing.
Yeah, their whole plan was just to disable the fleet long enough. And the U.S. had put into play a shipbuilding act in 1940. So they wanted to get in there and really disable the fleet so that they could hopefully expand into Southeast Asia and really kind of crush China before they were able to have to take this on fully.
You think they were going to try to take Hawaii over? Because I think it's like 50% of the population at that time was like of Japanese descent or something, right?
I'm sure eventually.
If they can make the move on Hawaii and actually keep the land, and hold the land. I mean, you're at advantage. You know what I mean? If you're Japan and you run Hawaii, you know what I mean. You have bases there. You have places. Because then America has to travel much further. Across Hawaii. The Atlantic, Hawaii.
All right, I like the way you say it.
That was very Polynesian. Yeah. So
I'm half black.
I was wondering why you're wearing that grass skirt. Yeah. It all makes sense.
I was concerned about the coconut bikini. I'm surprised the grass skirt.
He wears that every time.
Yeah, that's just a normal thing. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
I knew we had a guest. just dressing up.
So Japan was practicing this stuff, and the radio operators around there are trying to intercept their messages. And so what they do when they actually set sail is they leave all the radio operators behind to keep up the ruse that they are on the radio just like they're still training.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't read that.
Yeah. And they have I want to say it was like 38 ships, and they coordinated them all, complete radio silence.
No radio.
They took the keys from them. They would put like paper over the key holder for the ignition, I guess, for the radio and a piece of paper of it so they know if anyone even
tried
touched
to, yeah.
Right? So complete radio silence. They did everything with flags and lights.
That's amazing.
To coordinate everything. Completely.
I mean, you got to give them props. You know what I mean? How they organized and coordinated this massive attack on the U.S. soil, and they use no radio.
I mean? Like, I think we have the crazy mistake of like underestimating other countries, because like this is the one thing I always say, and it seems silly, but
well, the motherfuckers are samurais. You know what I mean? Like you they just had boats and guns.
When you watch North planes. Korea march, you watch China march, you watch Russia march. There is no United States badass fucking in sequence stomping, boot stepping tanks through the fucking streets, perfect organized, color coordinated, raising flags, making shapes. Yeah. Like that shit is crazy. The discipline and coordination it takes to orchestrate just a march in the street like that shows that the strategy and discipline is there. I've seen Americans march. We don't march like that. We're like walking in the street.
People have more pride, I think, and fear. Probably.
There's fucking high school bands that march better than the army sometimes, I feel like. That do like crazy stuff.
And
no offense to our military.
I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast or not, but you watch those special operations, those Russians that are special ops do training.
Mm-hmm.
They're fucking insane. Like live ammunition, shoot each other in the vest.
Damn.
Blindfolded. Multiple targets.
You were watching Born Identity.
No. These dudes, like real training sessions, like they bring these Americans into camp. They're, they're three-gun guys. They compete.
Right.
And they wanted to go and check out like how these Russian special agents train. And they take them and they go into this camp and they show them how they prepare basically, to go to war, to do whatever special operations they're going to do. And literally he's like, the first thing they do is like homeboy puts on a vest and he's like, here, I'm going to shoot this guy three times in the chest. And then I'm going to put on a blindfold and do it again.
Nope.
And like, are you that guy standing there? Like, I would probably let that guy shoot me because he's not going to miss.
Right.
Like, I mean, they're insane. And then they do like, okay, there's three targets and five guys in between. And I got to shoot the targets and not hit the dudes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like it's insane. Like, we don't do that here because we're afraid we're going to kill somebody. They don't give a shit. They kill the dude, replace him.
So flags and flashlights, amazing. Continue.
We got time.
When you talk about our military, it's kind of, you don't have to march around in the streets like that when you spend more money on your military than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of which are allies.
They're really training. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather have them train.
I don't know, though. I lose faith in that, too. I'm not talking shit on our military, but like, you read things like, oh, well, we can hit a silver dollar from 1,000 miles away with this missile. And then I'm like, then what is going on? Like, then how are we like bombing a school and accidentally killing a bunch of people? And, 90% of drone strikes don't hit their target. It's just insane to me.
Well, that's what happens. I mean, if you take,
they're keep, just keep stretching
going,
it Jordan, out on
yeah,
purpose.
Keep going. Yeah. Like I said, we'll get into stats on the war and, or, the bombing actually.
Definitely. So So complete radio silence, flashlights. That's how they, you know, not flashlights, but lights, more or less, to navigate and get there. The harbor thing they solved by putting, like, wooden fins on the torpedoes. So instead of them dropping straight down in the water, they flew more parallel so they wouldn't sink as deep.
Wooden fins.
Wooden fins. And they
press up.
And it was, they were only on until... They like hot glued them on or something because
they hit the water. All they had to do is hit the water and go in the direction that they wanted them to go, and then they could fall off.
That's the idea, is that the fins were supposed to fall off.
Right.
They were only on there to keep them fairly level in flight. So they figured out everything we thought was our defenses. It was just not going to happen at all. So they launched this attack. They get all the way there. They do it in two waves from six aircraft carriers. And at that point in time, our carriers were not in the harbor,
right,
which was huge. At that point in time...
There was two of them that weren't in the harbor that were main targets. Wasn't that right?
Yeah, one was in, I want to say it was in like Washington, like Puget Sound area, for retrofitting or repairs. And one was actually on its way back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be there when these attacks were launched, but because of bad weather, it wasn't.
Our entire naval fleet is there, except for two ships, basically.
We had three carriers, I think.
Yeah.
And I think the other one was just like out on patrol or something like that. So it just wasn't there.
Right.
But at that point in time, carriers weren't really seen. This is the battle that basically made carriers important.
Right.
Okay.
Because no one had done that before. They pictured naval battles like pirate battles. Like, they had big cannons and guns.
Well, you had submarines and boats, and you're shooting at each other.
Like, on ships.
It's battleship.
Yeah, no one had ever done an aerial attack like that from carriers. I think that was the first time that had happened, right?
Yeah, and the first time that it was really... I mean, they had some carrier planes in World War I, but it's the first time it was really effective.
Right.
Yeah, because Japan had already been doing these kamikaze strikes... before Pearl Harbor, there's multiple instances where they were using kind of the same tactics. I'm sure they changed them up a little bit with the torpedoes and all that stuff because of the geography of the harbor.
Right.
But there's multiple instances of they were already at war. They were already using a lot of the tactics that they used. So if they're going to attack us, their planes flying into our boats is not really a surprise because the U.S. has already seen what was going on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So they basically, their main targets were the battleships. At that point in time, battleships were seen as the most important boat in your fleet, right? So there were eight U.S. battleships that were there. All eight of them were damaged. Four of them were sunk.
Mm-hmm.
All of them except for the Arizona were eventually raised, so they floated them off the bottom of the harbor.
I saw that. That's insane.
Well, and I think I didn't see the reason why they didn't raise the Arizona, but I know that half of the people who died, the soldiers, I should say, were on the Arizona. Over 1,100 soldiers died on the Arizona. And the Arizona had 1.5 million gallons of gas.
Yikes.
Because they were getting ready to deploy to go back to the States.
Do they drain that? Or is that just...
No, it's still leaking today. The fuel is still leaking today.
Weird.
So
you think there'd be some crazy environmental thing all over that?
I don't know.
This is the 40s, man.
Yeah.
I know, but now, you know that it exists. Side note, my brother is in Pearl Harbor yesterday.
Oh, wow.
That's weird. Yeah, I don't know. That was just weird coincidence.
No coincidence.
No. So they also sank three cruisers, three destroyers, an anti-aircraft training ship, and a mine layer. They blew up 188 aircraft, and it says here 2,403 Americans were killed and 1,178 were wounded.
God, yeah, that's horrible.
I found it impressive that the low number of Japanese that died, like, because one of the biggest things is in the U.S. I think and for history is you hear. About the kamikazes, you know, like that was the crazy thing. Like the guys are trained. They know they're going to die. They're flying into the boats.
Did that even happen at Pearl Harbor though? There's no kamikaze pilots,
no,
right?
Not at Pearl Harbor.
We only got like
later in the war. That was a lot more of a desperate measure.
Yeah. And so like that, like you hear, I mean, I have growing up, you know, that kamikazes hit the boats. You know what I mean? Like you hear different things, and
yeah, just not at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I think
the only person we got was like one submarine beached itself.
Yeah, and they captured them.
So they captured them.
Japan lost 29 aircraft, 5 midget subs, 64 guys died, and 1 guy got caught
during Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
Well, we did all right. How did we get those planes? Like
they shot them down. They were still shooting. They were bombing, dropping torpedoes, and our military was.
Yeah, there's anti-aircraft guns on the boats and installations.
They did manage
to sortie some planes and get them up there.
Okay, because from what I was reading and what I was watching, it's just slaughter. Like, we were just sleeping and just got destroyed. Like, everybody just showed up and got us, and everyone was running around frantic. I didn't realize we got some of them.
Well, yeah, if you look at the numbers. We lost 2,400 guys, and they lost 64.
Yeah.
They pretty much got us.
Yeah, they won the battle. Like, I mean, they didn't win the war, but they won the battle.
Yeah, very decisively.
Yeah, my great-grandpa, and I think I still have the paper, but it's the Hawaiian Star from the day of Pearl Harbor, mm-hmm. and it has the images. Like, it's a legit Hawaiian newspaper from Pearl Harbor. That's pretty cool.
So the important thing is that even despite all of those huge losses, like we said, the battleships were able to be raised. 6 of the 8 actually fought again in the war. They were able to repair them.
I saw one of them didn't get sunk until 1980.
And we sold it to another country, the British sunk it.
The British sunk it, yeah.
But that's crazy.
Which is another example of us selling stuff to other countries and then turning against our allies. British sunk a ship that was once ours.
Yeah. So when they're raising them, though, like, they had sunk or just capsized? Like,
I think they sunk.
Yeah. And they brought them back up.
They
got dry docked them.
They have to, when you're developing these ships, they would have to have a way, like, if they sunk, that they would just bring them back up, dry them out, repair them, and then they're ready to go again.
Those things weigh, like, fucking, that's insane that you can bring that. Think about anything under the water. Think of like a fucking lawn chair fell in the pool.
It's lighter. Pick that thing up. Well, they're lighter usually.
No, the drag, like the everything. I guess, yeah, you're right. You can move stuff in the water, but.
Yeah, your buoyancy is different.
But what you can do is.
They put bladders in there and just air them up.
Yeah, you repair them and then you pump the water out and they'll be buoyant again.
Yeah. I would think that the electronics would be the hard thing to repair.
It was the 40s. Yeah, there weren't very many electronics.
Oh,
it
very
was all
true.
Hydraulics
yeah.
and
they
stuff.
They just changed everything else. Yep.
So that's another huge thing about the harbor being so shallow is that it's 40 feet in most places.
The boat sunk, but the top of it was still above
the
water.
It's easier to salvage. You know, if the harbor was deep, it would have been much more difficult.
That's true. 40 feet, some of those boats probably just hit the bottom and didn't go all the way down. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So the important thing is that while they did do a ton of damage to the fleet, is that they didn't hit important base installations. So the power station, the shipyard, maintenance base, fuel and torpedo storage, submarine piers, and the headquarters building, none of that stuff was hit.
Or the dry dock.
Well,
the dock was really important.
And they had a second attack planned to actually hit those
installments. Yeah, a third wave they did. Yeah.
Yeah. But what happened was, I guess the weather was so bad, the pilots got disoriented.
The weather started getting rough and the tiny ship was lost.
Yeah, they got disoriented and they actually dropped bombs. They hit homes and businesses.
Yeah.
But they said nobody was hurt, nobody was injured. I guess nobody was there. It was in the middle of the night.
That was a whole year later, too. Yeah. And they just sent two planes.
Yeah, they
they were scared.
Part of it was, like Brad said, the weather had started getting bad, and the other thing was it had started to get dark. And it would have been the first time for Japan to be landing planes on a carrier at night, which is a huge logistical issue. So that's why they didn't
launch. Radio silence probably too. They probably did the same thing.
Flashlights and sticks again.
Yeah. Well, once they started going ham and blowing everything up, they turned all the radios on, right? But it was up until that point. But it was going to be extremely difficult for them to land on those carriers. And so they called off the third wave. And Admiral Yamamoto, at the time, he's like, yeah, we did enough. And looking back on it, he said, that was a huge mistake to not do that.
Yeah.
Get the job. They didn't finish. Yeah. They fucked up.
Yeah, especially with their mentality and culture, I'm surprised that they didn't just go for it. You know what I mean? Like, they're willing to fly stuff into the side of a boat. Why not just land in the dark?
But when they did that, I mean, they knew that they were beaten. That was desperation, right?
Right.
That's like, you know, in the UFC fight when you've lost 4 out of the 5 rounds, and the last round you just go out throwing haymakers and try to.
Hopefully you don't get knocked out and you knock them out. Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. 13 seconds. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Well, this will be released. Everybody already know.
All right.
So
that really at least gets us up to the attack.
So that was my biggest thing, is like, why would you want to get into the war? So it's just the war machine. It's coming out of the Great Depression. You need a moneymaker, and like we're selling stuff to people and staying out of the war. But then we have some interest in resources in China. So that's one big motivation. But the other thing is probably Hitler's running rampant and don't want him king of the world.
Definitely. Yeah, that's part
Didn't FDR do a speech saying that we weren't going to basically entertain the fact that they want us in the war?
Well, Churchill wanted us in the war. Like, there's like talks, he wants us, but FDR knew that like no one wants 17 million people dying and 20 million injured again. Like, they're not wanting to do that. Everyone's probably pretty sad pants from eating their belt. You know what I mean? Like, the entire just climate of the United States is probably like, man, we just got over eating our belts. You know what I mean? Yeah. Can we like start watching TVs and stuff and like this radio, like listen to the radio with your family and have some pot roast?
Yeah.
I just ate my baby daughter and now I got to go to war.
Him with the baby eating. You work that into every story somehow.
I think the big thing too was that the United States just didn't want to go to war. And they knew that
the citizens didn't want to go to war. The population.
The general sentiment of the country is that we didn't want to go to war. And even FDR didn't want to have to go to war.
Right.
But it was just, I think that they saw it was the foregone conclusion that if Germany were to be able to beat England, and Russia and Japan, it was just going to be a matter of time until we were going to have to do it.
Right. It's a chess game and 12 moves ahead.
Exactly. So it became just a foregone conclusion. So it's like, do we do it now? And, you know, do we fight them with four allies or do we fight them all on our own?
Yeah.
There was like some speculation I read that our fleet was old, like, and they just wanted to like let the boats get blown up so they could justify building new boats because they couldn't get government funding. Like they couldn't justify the spending to build that new fleet. And some people say that that's why everything was in one place to let it get blown up like that.
Yeah. The rationale for it was, like I said, to be in closer proximity to our interests in Southeast Asia, like the Philippines and Guam.
Right.
That's like
the official story, right.
And what's really interesting is, so they moved it from San Diego to Hawaii, and I didn't mention this before, but the other reason that Japan didn't launch a third wave is because their fleet was low on fuel. It would have taken them to basically the end of their fuel supply. So they ran the risk.
They wouldn't have been able to get back.
Yeah, of being marooned out there and then getting smashed on by whatever forces we had left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading that because they directly after all those events, they did the whole investigation, like how they had the 9/11 investigation.
There's been like 10 of them or something crazy.
So they had the Pearl Harbor investigation. And I think the other thing that's happening is like there wasn't as much record keeping. Like now everything is digitized and everything spreads so fast with communication. And I think back then, like you can look at, and I watched several things online where they pulled up Time Magazine and like there's huge articles in Time Magazine saying FDR knew about it. We did it on purpose. Like we let it happen. All these things. Yeah. But it's like there's like one copy of the Time Magazine in grandma's like garage. You know what I mean? And like we're not putting that out there. Like people don't want to see that.
Yeah. A lot of the records that they had were, at least from what I read, a lot of it goes back to the cryptography and being able to decipher their messages. And
they knew something was going to happen. Yamamoto was planning to attack Pearl Harbor from as early as January of 1941, is what I read. So that's almost a year.
Talk about the encryption thing, because I know that that's a huge part of the stance that that it was a conspiracy, because supposedly we've been reading their messages for a year.
Yeah. So what I read, or at least the information I understand, the way I understand it is they have different codes, obviously, for different purposes.
Right.
So they have like the diplomatic code, which they send to the embassy, the Japanese embassy. And it's in here, it was called Purple. So that was our code name for it, right? And they had broken that in 1940.
Yeah.
So they knew what they were saying.
To the guy at the embassy. To the ambassador, right? And they got a 14-part message from Japan. It was decoded on the 6th and 7th of December. The message, it basically said that Japan was planning to break off diplomatic relations with the United States. So that means that we're going to war.
Yeah.
Right. And it was supposed to be delivered by the Japanese ambassador at 1 p.m. Washington time. So that's basically dawn in the Pacific. And the attack was launched at like 7:43. So basically, hey, we're going to war. And then boom, the bombs drop on Pearl Harbor. That's how it was supposed to play out. It didn't really work out like that. But the guy who, the Colonel Rufus Bratton, he was serving as an aide. He knew that they were going to attack Pearl Harbor or somewhere in the Pacific. So he passed that news along to American bases in the area, including Hawaii. But it was because of the weather conditions, it was supposed to be sent out by Western Union, which is crazy. Like, I think Western Union, like MoneyGrams.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But
instead that's of how they started.
Instead of the normal method of signaling. And by the time they got it, it was already on. Like, they were already getting attacked.
Yeah, that's a huge thing that we probably take for granted. Like, think what was happening. That shit went down, and they couldn't actually tell anyone. There's no direct line from Pearl Harbor to Washington to tell FDR. So, like, stuff starts coming through, but, like, the communication breakdown to be able to respond to that type of thing took a long time. I mean, talking about, like, hours.
Yeah.
And the initial response when they called to find out, to start telling him, they were scared that the lines weren't secure, and they were really reserved about releasing any information. They basically had to say, like, finally, just say it.
Yeah.
Just say what happened, you know?
Yeah.
But they also didn't want, like, press release. They didn't want it to get out to the public what had really happened. But it's just crazy that communication, like, telegrams. That's crazy that's how you're telling, like, hey man, they blew us up. Yeah. It's really slow going compared.
Well, and like we were talking about earlier, you know, as the planes were coming in, there was a supposed a fleet of B-1 bombers that were flying in.
Yeah, B-17s.
Or the B-17s.
Yeah.
And so a radar guy actually saw the fleet coming in of Japanese planes.
Aircraft, yeah.
They told him to ignore it because it was the B-17s coming in.
Yeah.
So they actually had a little bit of, I mean, even if you had 5 minutes to know you were going to be attacked, everybody could get up, everybody could be ready, and it was ignored.
What was the name of the admiral? Because the investigations, basically, they went through their first round of investigations.
Admiral Turner?
That's not Turner. They laid all the blame on the commanding officers.
Yeah, there was two guys, a general and an admiral, that got basically relieved of duty after Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, so they said it was basically negligence. Like, you guys weren't doing what you were supposed to do.
Yeah. And they were told by multiple people that to be ready and be prepared, and I guess they only got half of what they told them to do. They only did half of the things.
Yeah. It was Walter Shore and Husband Kimmel.
Husband Kimmel, that's
old school 40s name right there.
That guy's, if I ever have a son, you should have...
Husband.
Can you change your son's name, Brent?
To Husband?
Yeah. That's a manly name.
But nickname.
They were under the impression that, like I said, because it's so shallow, they weren't worried about torpedoes. What they were really worried about was any type of attack was going to be preceded by some type of major sabotage.
Right.
So they had the harbor set up. The planes were like wingtip to wingtip, which you just fly down and you strafe all the planes.
Right.
Right? They were like in the worst possible defensive setup for what actually happened because they didn't think that was really a possibility.
Well, the big thing is, so the reason that they held the admiral and the general accountable, I watched like his trial. So I think it was Kimmel. I watched his trial and he was saying, you know, like, I did not receive warning. And the whole basis for their thing is that he was supposed to have these long-range surveying flights that were supposed to cover, like, I mean, a huge area of ocean. And they said they surveyed they questioned and interviewed some other soldiers and people from that time that were, you know, knew logistically it would take 191 planes flying 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on this perfect, like, my fuel's running out, come back, land. My fuel's running out, come back, land. 191 planes to try to survey the area at the bare minimum. And they ran these tests all the time, and they would have, like, oh, Japanese are flying in, and they would pretend like they're the Japanese, and they never, ever successfully detected the tests. Like, when American pilots would fly in.
So it was almost
nearly
impossible for the amount of airspace to be covered.
He needed 191. Yeah. Guess how many they had? They had 49 planes.
Wow.
So, like, they're like, here, you got 49 planes, and you're supposed to watch all this shit, and then they're holding him accountable for it.
Well,
he didn't
apparently
have the
they
planes
didn't give a
to
fuck
do it
because they relieved him of duty. So,
yeah, there's actually still a movement. Like, I watched this thing, and it's current. It's like, it says correct 70 years of dishonor or something, and there's this whole movement to reinstate his status or something, because I'm pretty sure he's dead and gone, but that him and the other guy to reinstate their status, to sign a petition, send a letter.
Did they get, like, dishonorably discharged or
something? They got demoted to some some yeah, like, hey, you were the admiral, now you're like the desk job guy, like, so and then finally I think they quit.
That's a big thing though too, and in a lot of military circles it's a legacy thing, right?
So
his kids and his kids' kids, you know, might be involved, like, you know, like Top Gun style, right?
No,
like,
still,
that's husband's kids, and that, you know, fucking that guy was an idiot.
They give him a bad name.
We were just lazy with names back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
Baker.
Yeah. What do you want to call him? Husband? Husband? Sounds good.
Who makes bread? Husband Baker? So they laid all the blame on him. And then that was his justification, was like, hey, I didn't even have the planes to do it, nor did I receive warning, you know? So it just shows me that obviously, like, you set that guy up to fucking fail. That guy's a scapegoat for sure. And they hoped that that's what was going to happen.
Isn't that what everybody is, though? The U.S. government isn't going to take blame.
Well, like Jordan said, they kept doing investigations, though. And I think by the sixth investigation, they found that we did. That's when they confirmed, no, we had transcripts of these codes. Like, we knew this shit was going down, and we did not forward it to the powers that be.
Yeah, the diplomatic code they had broken, but from what I read and the way I understand it, the naval code, they didn't.
Okay.
They, man, it's really kind of crazy. The way it was set up is the intelligence services, the cryptography guys, it was so secretive, okay, that they were separated. So there was an Army cryptography team and, and a Navy cryptography team, and they weren't allowed to collaborate or communicate with one another.
Wow.
They were completely separate.
So we don't know. Like, FDR might not have seen that. We may have had that code, but it doesn't necessarily mean he saw that, you know?
Yeah. A lot of what's been said is that we didn't have it because if we did, they would have had messages deciphered from the Navy and you'd be able to get them.
Their
thing is that a lot of records were destroyed during the war, or after the war, process, for secrecy reasons.
Yeah.
And the other thing is
which is covering a paper trail. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously there was other stuff going on.
But they basically said the reason that you can't get any of these things is because there aren't any of them.
Right.
That is the justification today. But there were
Saying that though? The government?
Well, when people request for
Freedom of Information
Acts, things like that, they're saying, I want you to produce deciphered messages.
Oh, they're saying no because there are none.
Yeah, there aren't any. That's why you can't get any.
Yeah, but doesn't mean that they didn't happen, because they could have gotten rid of them.
It's a huge possibility.
Yeah.
So that's where conspiracy comes in. Yeah.
Or you're just lying. You're just saying.
Or you're just lying.
Nope. Yeah.
Who's going to know? Like, they tell you, nope, that didn't happen.
But I mean,
what are you going to say?
70 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? So really what the big thing was is the code. So you have that issue where you're not putting all your resources together to work collaboratively. The other thing is that the Dutch were also intercepting Japanese messages, right? Because they have people in the Dutch East Indies.
Yeah.
They're out there. They have their own cryptography team. So the Dutch were sending us their work, but we weren't sending the Dutch our work. So, hey, we figured out that this is where the code starts, and you know, we need to use your translators, because there's thousands of radio messages or communications.
And they could be talking about what's for lunch.
Exactly.
You know, they don't know.
Exactly. So that's something that was huge too, is that and the other issue was that the cryptography was seen as a kind of like a dead end job.
Yeah.
So
those guys slept at their desk and worked 7 days a week. I like read a whole thing on that.
Yeah. But there was you weren't going to become Admiral Husband.
You were just a cryptographer.
Exactly. It was seen as so a lot of people that did it, they didn't do it for a long period of time. They moved on to something else with higher career paths. So you didn't have professionals cryptographers.
Yeah, like the 17-year-old that just got into the Navy and he's in there trying to
think how difficult and impressive that is. Like, it's hard enough, like, if you don't know what's going on, like, you don't have a book on the Japanese language, just them speaking over the radio in Japanese.
Yeah, if you didn't know
over a broken radio signal, let alone taking a language that's in that you don't know, that's then encoded into some other crazy random pattern and probably broken down over beeps or something.
Yeah. Like, and what they said was their code was a multi-part code. So it was, you had to break one code just to figure out where the message starts, and then break a second code to figure out what the message was.
Wow.
So at that point in time, what was said was that we were able to figure out where the messages started, and they were working on breaking the codes, and they changed the codes all the time.
Right.
So they were they were halfway to where they needed to be.
Right.
They weren't able to completely decipher everything.
And I think what's impressive, though, is that the Japanese had been at war for thousands of years, you know what I mean, through ancient times. And they always seem to fall short of actually like accomplishing like a huge,
I think they'd never been defeated, you know, before war. That actually though, like
they beat the crap out of Russia not too long before that.
Well, I mean, but they always seem to it's like all of their stuff is super impressive, like the crazy, you know, cryptography and the way that they attacked and how detailed and secretive they are, but then they kind of fall short, like as far as like completing, you know what I mean?
No,
like completing
sushi.
The task.
Yeah, sushi maybe. Next.
Yeah, they had a, even then, I think, I want to say that the battleships that they had in World War II, the Yamato, there were two of them, the Yamato, I can't remember the name of the other one, but they're still the biggest battleships that have ever been built.
And they're really good at killing whales too.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. And dolphins. But
God, that movie about the dolphins.
I think a part of that, Brad, is probably because, you know, like we talked about, they're, don't have a lot of resources. They live on an island.
Right? Yeah, true.
And really the geography, the only way that Japan is really going to be able to be a world power would be to crush China.
Right.
And take whatever China land. Has.
True. Yeah, I didn't really think about that, the geography aspects of it. Yeah, I guess they need to start a war now and move in on somebody. Well, we get some are. Better land.
That's when I was reading this, something I thought that was really relevant to today and to right now was the Japanese internment thing. So because of that, as a result of that, at the time, 92,000 Japanese American citizens resided in the United States. And there was a lot of concern immediately that maybe some of those were like sleeper cells, like they had been placed because
knew racism went up in the
like
in
crazy.
America.
Well, yeah. Hitler had just done that tactic, like he had just seeded like informants and people, put people in place in certain countries to prepare in preparation for invasions and for you know, military tactics. So our fear was that, and it's like everyone always remembers all this good stuff about FDR, but like that's a dark deal right there. Like we had Japanese internment camps. Like we took women and children because they're Japanese, and we referred to them as Japs, which that had to become a derogatory. Like there's this crazy like I'll post it. There's
you
an
mean
audio
the J
clip.
Word, Brent.
Yeah,
we can't say
there's an
word.
Audio clip of FDR talking, and like they left the recorder on, like the dictation recorder was on.
Oh wow!
And he says some stuff like that's really supporting this conspiracy thing, and he uses that derogatory terminology through the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, the internment camps weren't a conspiracy. Like that was like a
I know. I'm not saying that.
Yeah. The conspiracy was that there were Japanese spies in the population.
I'm sure there were.
Right. There probably were. Well, we know there were. At Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, we found someone that. Yeah.
Yeah, there were apparently two of them, but one of them was of Japanese descent.
I mean, Japan is working with Germany, who is seeding cells in places that they're going to attack. You think that Japan is not going to use that same winning feature?
Yeah.
I mean, Germany is winning.
Well,
you know what I mean?
The reason I bring it up because Facebook and Muslims, like right now, like there are just a bunch of rednecks that would just love to do it. You know what I mean?
Well, and the difference I think with that is that's not a race thing. That is an actual religion.
Right.
Like, and that's happened. And I talked about history repeating itself in the beginning of the podcast. You know, religious persecution has been going on for as long as religion's been around.
Yeah, even that. I mean, you talk about internment camps and things like that. They did that in Cuba. The Spanish did that in Cuba. Mm-hmm. And that's why the U.S., that's why we had the Spanish-American War. That's why Teddy Roosevelt went there, is that they were doing all these, they called them reconcentration camps. Oof. And they put, because there was a big insurgency there, right?
Yeah.
And we were like, this is ridiculous. We're going in there to liberate these people. And we go in there and do it. And then in the Philippines, we are there and we run into the same type of an insurgency.
Right.
And you know what we do? We put all those people
camps.
In camps
yeah.
and do the same thing that they did in Spain or in Cuba.
We're hypocrites. You know what I mean? We're hypocrites. We're politically correct and we're not going to hurt anybody and we're going to let all these people in. But then guess what? When they start turning on us, what's going to happen? We're making camps, you know, like it's so weird. Like everything, you look at history and you look at what's going on and there's a possibility, but I think we'll be we'll be destroyed from the inside out before we do anything, because everybody's so pussy and everybody's so afraid to hurt somebody else's feelings. Like, I don't want to hurt Jordan. He's a person. He's a human. But he's trying to kill me, but I don't want to hurt him. I mean, he's probably has a family.
I think this is the low tech thing. I think flashlights and sticks is what's going to get us in the end, dude. I think that we have satellites and we have all this technology.
We're not hearing anything
stuff.
Over the radio.
Yeah.
We're not hearing.
But people can make bombs out of, fertilizer. Like, it's that low-tech stuff.
And set it off with a cell phone.
Yeah, that you're not going to figure out that they're going to get us with. How long did the internment thing last, and how did that disperse? Like, all of a sudden, we're like, everything seems cool. You guys can go now. No hard feelings.
Yeah, it pretty much lasted until the end of the war, from Pearl Harbor on. Yeah. About 4 years.
And what were the conditions? I mean, were we at least...
I think if you watch, there's movies on it, and they were.
I mean, it wasn't
they
Auschwitz,
were living,
right?
No, they were living conditions. Like, they were fed, and
they were living conditions.
Yeah, I mean, they had
term.
Houses,
Yeah, so. They weren't good. They weren't good, But they weren't like the concentration camps where they were like forced labor camps.
I saw signs. There's like pictures of signs that say like "Japs go home."
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, like it got crazy. The public got really crazy.
It was two years apparently from February 1942, which is only 3 months. No,
that's
two
a
months
month.
After,
yeah. So from Pearl Harbor on,
they got on it quick. Yeah,
yeah. They took them a month to get a secret
like,
police
let's
together to round
scoop
everybody
up. The Japanese. Yeah, the Japs. Excuse me. Pardon my French. I just want to be historically correct here.
I think they called them Nips.
Yeah.
Wow, what is that?
Well, Japan, it's Nippon, right?
So it's the N-word again?
Yeah, they called them Nips. And there was like crazy like Walt Disney cartoons and stuff. It's
I got
like
Nips.
That.
Dude, could we be in internment camps because we have Nips? I mean...
We will. FEMA camps, man. It's going to happen.
Camps, yeah.
Black helicopters.
So when we... These are American citizens, though. So like we let the internment camps up and let them out. Do they just go back to the general population and then we just treat them like shit?
Yeah, I think that was the big deal of it was that you rip these people out of their jobs and their communities and their businesses and you put them in these camps and then you just open the gate one day and say, okay, well, you're free to go. It's like... Their
being released from prison.
Yeah, their life is completely...
They're U.S. citizens, though. It's not like...
You got to go. You probably lost your house.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You've lost your job for sure. And then after that, you've just went to World War II with Japan and, all these other places. Now the guy is Japanese coming back to ask for his job back. How do you think the Americans are going to take, the white guy who owns the store... Like, you were a good worker, but...
Yeah, there was stigma for sure.
Oh, like, for sure. Yeah.
In Canada, on the west coast of Canada, they either put people in camps or they put them on boats and sent them back to Japan.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And they probably weren't even born there.
Yeah, they legit just sent them on back.
There was probably a lot of Japanese that got...
They didn't even speak Japanese,
No,
probably.
That's what I'm saying. They were probably born here, full American.
That guy's like, man, I'm from Texas, man. Like, what are you doing? I don't want to go to Japan.
Yeah. I heard cattle. There's no cattle. Oh, the Kobe beef.
But
that's how they got started there.
It's crazy to think of that just because it's pretty much what's going on now. And it happened then. And like I said, it happened 50 years before then. And we talk about, Brad's talking about, oh, I think it's going to be this way because of how politically correct we are and these things. It's like, I think that everything is cyclical, right?
Right.
So what's going to
history repeats itself. Like that's the thing. It probably will happen.
Something is going to happen to a point where it might be worse than 9/11. It'll be something to galvanize people where people's public opinion will change to a point where we repeat a lot of the things we do, maybe not exactly the same way, but I think that America will become a much tougher, harder nation at some point in time. They'll have to
through hardship.
Well, and I think too,
it's going to be the collapse of the dollar.
I honestly believe that history has been written in a certain light to keep people from understanding what really happened in history. I mean, there's so many things that our kids are learning now that are not true or are half truths or are watered down, and or they just get them like, oh yeah, we did this, and it's like one page of the book, and then they go on to something else. When really, it's a very important fact in history that we should know.
Yeah,
I didn't learn history until I got out of school and actually started looking at stuff like this podcast. Enlightens us to a ton of things that we would never have even looked up. And you start looking up the stuff, and you're like, "Holy shit!"
Yeah,
like that was that went on? Like, that's not what was told to us.
I know. I feel inclined like when my kids are coming home from school with the Thanksgiving
What'd
thing.
You learn?
I was like, yeah. Man, should I just lay it down for them? Like,
I would.
Like,
I mean,
it's kind of deep for a second grader, you know? Like,
yeah. And I mean, just, you know, you start telling your kids, you know, hey, everything's a lie. You know, don't listen to your teacher. You know, like, what are they going to, you know what I mean? Like, that's, then it makes you look crazy.
Then I wonder if I am crazy, though.
Yeah.
My problem.
Well, no, but then again, though, I mean, you know, there's facts in history that are not told. And now we're looking at these things that, hey, that happened 50 years ago or 80 years ago or 100 years ago, and it's happened three times since then. It's going to happen again, and no, there's so many things that people don't know.
I printed this out. I didn't go through it at all. I just didn't know if we had extra time. But that, like, I have a list of 53 like admitted false flags from multiple countries, from the United yeah. States to Russia to everywhere. And we know that those things occur. Like, people do things and fake things to justify actions.
Yeah.
Like, it's yeah. it's obvious. And it's just a matter of yeah. time before
we figure
stuff out.
And that's why I really compared, because there was a lot of things saying that, like, hey, the U.S. knew that Japan was planning an attack against, you know, against us
somewhere in the Pacific.
Yeah. Before that, nobody was wanting to go to war. How do we get to go to war?
Right.
Well, we let them attack us.
Even when like 9/11 happened, like, I was one of the sheeple, man. Immediately, I had
You're pissed off.
I was mad. I had an American flag.
I think everybody did. I watched the fucking. I watched it. You know what I mean? You're watching things, and you're in the most state of disbelief. Is this really happening?
But
imagine if you were there at Pearl Harbor watching it. You know, like, you're in some state of just, like I said, disbelief, where it's not even real at that moment.
I'm so distrusting now, though, like when like San Bernardino happens, when this stuff happens,
yeah.
I keep my mouth shut on Facebook. I'm not, yeah. I'm like trying to be like, hey, let's be nice. Like, people just died. But immediately my first thought is the opposite. Like, well, what is it? Let's see the crisis yeah. actors. What's happening yeah. here?
And what's the issue that the government's going after?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Real
like
motivation.
They're really shooting at getting rid of guns. And when they start doing that, these shootings start coming out. You know, and
like, I didn't even look at the San Bernardino thing for like
I haven't seen it, and I don't even care. Like, I'm over the whole thing.
So, like, these things happen. Like, we talk about these things happen in history all the time. So when I'm talking about the Spanish-American War, what really kicked that off is we sent a battleship down there, the USS Maine, and it caught on fire and sunk. Right, and they blamed it on.
And
the Cubans,
yeah.
right? We got to go down there.
It was an explosion.
Yeah, they just killed our boat. We got to go kill
coal
him.
Caught on fire.
Yeah, coal caught on fire. And what's crazy is, so they're like, all right, well, we're going to send the USS Oregon down there. So the USS Oregon was in like California. So it had to sail down around
South
America. That
thing was full of hippies, man. They just had patchouli oil and they're making bracelets.
Weed.
But what's crazy is that on the way over there, a spontaneous fire erupted on the USS Oregon in the coal chamber. They had to flood the boat and like, it's the same thing that happened that sent a country to war
right.
in a harbor. The same exact thing happened in a different boat, completely devoid of any conflict.
Yeah.
But it's too late. The decision was already made.
Right.
We're going to attack them. Yeah.
Tons of stuff happens like that where it comes out later that we even find out, like when the Iraq thing, like to get into
that's
Iraq.
That's just a big oops, though. It's like, oops.
They paid like, there was some like politician or someone's daughter that they paid to tell stories that they were stealing babies from incubators or something.
Yeah.
And she
stood there and cried.
And
people believe that shit. And then they're like, Well, we gotta go.
Yeah, it's done, it's done. Same thing. Weapons of mass destruction. Oh, there weren't any. Oh, there were no babies. Oh, that was just a coal fire. It's like always after. It's too late.
But the thing is, though, that was for the public. That was to get the public on board.
Oh yeah.
And we already know what we're going over there for. There's no weapons. There's no this or that. You know, we're going over there because of certain policies or issues that they have that the public doesn't care about.
I saw one, like a meme, like a post the other day, because I follow a lot of conspiracy people. I mean, it can be completely
all conspiracy people just do memes now. They don't even do websites anymore. It's just a meme.
Well, it said like, hi, my name's like Walter Johnson or whatever. I'm a biological like engineer. I worked for 3 years in Iraq trying to assess the situation for weapons of mass destruction. And then I found that there were zero weapons of mass destruction. And like a week before his trial or something, he showed up dead in a field like by his house, murdered.
It's weird how that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so yikes. It's really interesting to me. There was an Obama aide who said this quote, and it's actually a Winston Churchill quote, but he said he got in a bunch of trouble for it, like, you know, raked over the coals. He said, I forget where it was, but it was somewhere in the public, like the media, like never waste a good tragedy.
Right.
Or something like that. Right. So, or where there's major issues, that is your opportunity to go ahead with whatever diplomatic solution
might be related.
Yeah. What can political you spin push that through? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the time. Don't waste a good tragedy.
Yeah. Right. And that's an awesome quote. That's what happens. Like normally you have some big event that happens and then we're at war, you know, and it's justified. You know what I mean? Like, because nobody, if you asked America right now, do you want to go to war? Everybody's just, no, don't want to fight. Don't want to go to war.
Keith wants to go.
Pull our troops, you know, but then boom, 2,000 people die. Guess what we're doing? Yeah. Everybody's go kill those motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. Like, let's get them.
The wrong
them.
Ones. Like we do the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. These guys over here who are just neighbors.
Hey, what's the, what racist name did we give the Spanish in the Spanish American War?
I don't know.
I don't know, but I did see that something on that came through Facebook. Catalonian, that's
that's a part of Spain. They're trying to break away.
Well, mine isn't as cultured. They celebrate during Christmas a guy who takes a shit for some reason.
Really,
I can't remember what it's called. They have a character like a Santa Claus style character, but in their culture, it's a Christmas character that's pooping, bent over pooping for some reason.
Wow. It was just like Mr. Hanky.
It was weird Christmas facts. I was like, that's weird. They actually, it's like a public thing that they celebrate that.
So I've got a great quote here from it's Vice Admiral Frank Beatty, who was apparently very close with FDR, and it was an aide to the Secretary of the Navy. He says, by December 7th, it was evident even to me that we were pushing Japan into a corner. I believe that it was the desire of President Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill that we get into the war, as they felt the Allies could not win without us, and all our efforts to cause the Germans to declare war on us failed. The conditions we imposed upon Japan to get out of China, for example, were so severe that we knew that nation could not accept them. We were forcing her so severely that we could have known that she would react toward the United States. All her preparations in a military way, and we knew their overall import pointed that way.
That's an admiral. He's in the know.
He knew, He knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And that's crazy because, you know, if they're planning an attack on the U.S. a year before they attack, or roughly, this was ongoing where they just kind of little by little squeezed them until they had no. I mean, that's like you know, getting in a dog's face and hitting him or whatever. Eventually, he's probably going to bite you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what you're doing.
If you're generals and admirals and they probably saw, like, they're probably buddies with Mr. Husband that got, like, you know, owned and just, demoted for no reason. They know it, so they're pissed. I actually found a quote from Vice Admiral Ruthven E. Libby, and he said, "I will go to my grave convinced that FDR ordered Pearl Harbor to let happen." Must have known.
Yeah, and there was a lot of stuff that if you read, like it says that FDR let it. They knew it was going to happen, and he let it happen.
I'll post that audio clip because I don't know how much more we have to say about this, but I'll post that audio clip, and it's pretty convincing just hearing him talk to whoever he's talking to. It's a couple members of the FBI and someone else, and it's their conversation.
Yeah.
And the things he says, you're like, yeah, that dude.
There was a CBS reporter that was supposed to do an interview with him like the same day that this happened.
Yeah.
And the CBS reporter wrote like he didn't seem that surprised,
right?
And then I guess he eventually got to do the interview with him, and he was like he basically alluded to the fact that he will never tell the true story of what happened.
Wow.
And he's obviously dead now,
right?
But he never got a chance to write it, but it was alluding to that.
Well, yeah, because he got killed right after that.
They knew, like, well,
you guys remember George Bush sitting in the classroom with the book when they told him, like, that was on tape, his first like expression when they whispered in his ear that we just got attacked. He was just like, "What? Next page, page three, man. The doggy."
let me finish this book.
The doggy
ran far,
the fucking book upside down. That is the best picture ever.
Well, and that was a setup. Like, that was like a, like, oh, George Bush is reading to kids, and we're going to go in and tell them, like, this tragedy
happened. If you're reading a fucking book in a kindergarten class, and you're the president of the United States, and they say that we're under attack, they just fucking, missiles might have hit our fucking World Trade Center, fucking cross your leg and continue to fucking page four of the doggy got the ball.
Upside down book.
You stand the fuck up and walk out. Well, you're the president.
That's how
you get
crazy,
on a plane,
like,
and go fucking deal with shit.
That's how OG the you know, Bush was, though. He was like, he was reading the book upside down because it was so easy for him to read.
He's like Leonardo da Vinci.
He needed some sort of challenge.
I didn't even notice.
He needed a challenge to his brain.
I'll tell you what, I was very impressed when he dodged that shoe. Did you see that? Oh, the dude chucked that shoe out.
He did the Matrix.
Yeah.
It's so crazy that family to have George Bush Senior, George Bush, and now Jeb Bush running. Like,
well, that's how gangster conspiracy. Are you?
It's that, really
that's
weird.
That's the conspiracy.
The head of the CIA would be, you know, have a family legacy in politics. Yeah. It's so, I can't believe that.
Yeah, it's just how it gangster is that to be like, oh, my dad was president. Who oh, my brother's president. CIA? I'm gonna try to be president.
Oh,
man.
First Bush. Yep. Yeah. The man who followed through with the attack on JFK.
My
president and his son's president, and then his other really retarded son, who runs Florida, is now running for president.
He sure sounds a lot better than George Bush, though. I have to say,
he does sound.
He doesn't have any.
He's a fucking pussy, though. He's like, they're like, he like says one thing, and then they're like, well, what about this? And he's like, well, and then he backpedals.
You know how you can tell who's going to be president? If they have a unique characteristic or speech pattern.
So
if they don't have a quirk,
you're saying Trump is going to be president?
He does. Yeah, he has that whole funny mouth, like, moving thing. Like, if someone on SNL can do an impression of you, you'll probably have a chance at being the president.
That's funny.
Jeb Bush, though, he's just a normal guy. He's just talking. He's too, like, his speech is fine. Like, he doesn't have anything.
But he's like a school teacher.
But Bernie Sanders, like, those guys have that weird little, you could do an impression of it.
Bernie Sanders is an idiot, though.
It's funny, though. I don't really watch the debates or anything. My daughter last night, it's like, dude, it was like 1 a.m. I'm bad dad. I was up studying, and she was still watching stuff with me. Pearl Harbor videos, stuff like that's probably not good for an 11-year-old. But she was like, Dad, can we watch the news? I was like, what do you mean the news? Like, we don't have cable. She's like, well, I just want to watch like the presidential debates. And I was like, that is weird. Yeah, you want to watch that? Kids. I was like, okay. So we put it on.
Well, then, my 9-year-old daughter doesn't like pizza.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I was like, man. That?
Yeah, I was like, no, I was just saying, like, that is, you have a weird kid. I have a weird kid. Like, what kid doesn't like pizza?
I think in
that
Pennsylvania, you can give them back, like, at a fire station until they're 16. So you might want to try
in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, normal amount or something. That's probably completely wrong, but.
All right, we want to thank the sponsors. Are we done?
Yeah.
We're done talking about this.
So Pearl Harbor, you know.
Conspiracy just, for
sure. Yeah, go check it out. Yeah, conspiracy. It didn't even happen. It's like Sandy Hook.
All right, so sponsors. We would like to thank our sponsors, Digital Creations. They are located in Bakersfield, California at 1705 20th Street, Bakersfield, California, 93301. They can be contacted at 661-322-5552. They have a wide range of printing services from pictures to hard goods, coffee mugs. As I always say, blankets for your grandmother, pillows for your grandmother. They make all kinds of cool stuff with your picture on it.
You make it sound so interesting.
It is interesting, sir. That didn't sound scripted at all, right? No. You can check them out on Facebook. Also,
like an asshole.
Thanks. That Beard Stuff. That Beard Stuff has a wide range of products from beard balms, washes, mustache wax, as well as other goods such as mugs. They can be contacted at 661-932-2329 and check them out on social networking. We also want to thank El Yucateco Hot Sauce for sending us koozies and sunglasses and hats and shirts and hot sauces. We've been giving those things out from Florida to Michigan to Wisconsin. We are spreading hot sauce everywhere.
Yucateco. Like, I don't know what the hell's wrong with
just
me.
Think of Yucatan. Yucateco. So check them out at www.elyucateco.com and any major grocery chain. So that's all I got, Uncle Brad.
Well, if you liked our show on Pearl Harbor, we'd like to thank Jared from Subway for helping us out on that.
Ooh.
And sorry. thank you, Jordan. Really gave us a lot of facts and filled Dave's spot nicely. I think you were funnier than him, and you definitely were blacker.
Yeah, so. And better looking.
And better looking for sure.
The slight height difference, though. Yeah. I did notice that.
Yeah.
Big shoes to fill. Right?
Yeah, we had to move the mic a little bit.
Dave's in Oregon right now hugging a tree.
Yeah, so that's it for Pearl Harbor. Oh, he's in Oregon? That's right.
Yep.
That's it for Pearl Harbor. Check out our next show on how to give yourself a Brazilian wax and get that hair out of your ass. Don't be a retard.
Up in the morning, grab my trees, and I get to a young nigga. I do my own thing, so let me do it. If you want to know one thing about me, I'm about my paper. Fuck a bitch, soon as my iPhone rings. I see you later. Hop up in the Chevy, grab my keys, and then I'm outy first thing. If it's about that cheese, then I'm about it. I be stacking up. Got no time for niggas hating low, we backing up. Keep that clean and watch some Daytons cruising down the street. Hear my car before it's coming. Fuck the police. Windows down, I'm smoking something in my bitch bag. She gon' ride if shit get crazy. Goons messed up, they gon' slide. You tried to play me since a young nigga. Kept that pack up in the telly since a young nigga. Been had tats like Machiavelli. Shoot for fun, nigga. Fun, nigga. My niggas bust, you better run, nigga. Run, nigga. King of fucking everything.